Hello, and welcome back into the Schlafly-verse, a podcast exploring the bizarre political and cultural legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. I'm Will, and I'm as ever joined by my fellow Schlafly not, Torrin.
Hello, thank you very much for having me, as always. Excited to hear what this episode's about.
Mm-hmm. So today, we're going to discuss what Ed Martin got up to on the 6th of January, 2021, and more importantly, what he thought was going to happen, and we'll also do another episode, which will follow on from this, discussing what's happened since and how he's framed the events and what have you.
Is he just hiding somewhere in a remote corner of the world?
He isn't, but someone else is. So to recap, Ed Martin is the president of Phyllis Schlafly's Eagles, which is like a political organisation furthering Christian nationalist policies and agenda and stuff in the United States. And following the 2020 presidential election, Ed Martin became involved in Stop the Steal, which was a movement which challenged the results, basically saying that Biden stole the election.
It was all fraudulent.
It's all fraudulent.
Stop the steal, am I right?
Stop that steal. mail-in ballots and other gerrymandering.
It was just crazy, wasn't it? How Trump could just kind of blurt out that it was fraudulent, which he was always going to do, I suppose.
Well,
but like, there was no substance to it. It was just...
Oh, yeah, he, I mean, even during the campaign, or he did it in 2016 as well. He said before the election, said they're going to, like, if I don't win, it would be stolen, which is a whole...
It's just
his
backup
nonsense.
Plan, isn't it?
If
I don't win, I'm going to cry and whinge like a baby until I get what I want.
Exactly. Exactly what it is. Exactly.
Yeah. Thankfully, this time, he doesn't appear to have got what he wants.
No, he's too busy sending letters to the Actors Guild complaining about, well, resigning from the Actors Guild. That's funny. So Martin on his radio show... promoting this narrative, and he also got involved in StopTheSteal.us, which was like the proper, almost like an official organisation which tried to take control of this more grassroots campaign.
Like the organising body for the movement.
I say it wasn't, like, it's a broader movement, like they're not actually in charge of it, they sort of claim to be responsible for in charge. I mean, they organised the rallies, which Ed did, the Washington DC rallies, so they enabled it. There might have been one on the 5th, and one on the 6th as well. Which they were involved in, yes.
So Ed Martin was potentially involved in organising the rally on the 6th.
Yes, he was loosely involved and was certainly present at the rally, as we'll get to, on the 6th. So this organisation, StopTheSteal.us, was run and headed by a man called Ali Alexander, who is a scary, dangerous bloke who has links with Alex Jones, who is a quite famous conspiracy theorist and right-wing radio host. Well, this podcast is inspired by a podcast called Knowledge Fight, who follow Alex Jones. So they do to Alex Jones what I'm sort of doing to Ed Martin, but much more frequently.
Yes.
So that's the gist of it.
Cool.
So remember Ali Alexander, he was in charge of StopTheSteal.us.
Okay.
Because he will pop up in a bit.
Cool.
So, Torrin.
Yes.
What do you know about what happened on the 6th of January, 2021? In the US, of course.
Yes. on that day I was eating toast. No. So what happened in America? The Electoral College was meeting to certify Biden's presidency.
Yeah.
And Trump had organised a rally to protest this. And in the rally, in one of the speeches he did, he was saying, you know, after this we're going to walk up to the Capitol, I'll be there with you. That kind of rhetoric. And that led to... the people who walked up to the Capitol, breaking in, killing people, and you know, I've seen the footage since, and they were scarily close to quite important people like Mike Pence, the Vice President at the time, and other important actors in government.
Yep, very good.
I know stuff.
I know you know stuff.
I listen to you when you ramble about.
So we're going to start off with the Pro America Report, which is Ed's radio show, the broadcast for the 31st of December, 2020,
okay.
Which might sound a bit strange, but the reason is, as New Year's Eve, obviously, so roughly a week before the 6th, and Ed basically spends most of the show talking about what they think is going to happen on the 6th, which, as you say, is all about challenging Congress, ratifying the result.
Again in Georgia, they're having people vote by mail, they're not signature checking. I mean, this is insane. And what you need to know is it's coming to a head. And congratulations today to Senator Josh Hawley for stepping up and announcing that he will join Congressman Mo Brooks in challenging the electoral results on January 6th. Now,
yeah, so Josh Hawley is senator for Missouri, which is the state lot linked to Phyllis Schlafly and Ed Martin by association. And since the 6th, Josh Hawley's gotten a lot of hot water because on that day he did like a raised fist salute to the protesters outside the Capitol.
Is he still in his position?
He's still in his position, yeah. But him, Ted Cruz is also another senior Republican who came out backing the whole Stop the Steal narrative, trying to overturn the results through Congress. But Josh Hawley's much younger and much more vibrant and seen as obviously more likely to capitalise and benefit from becoming this Trumpian figure.
So yeah, the motivation for Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley is that, you know, they can kind of take the baton from Trump in terms of leading this Trumpian kind of side of the Republican Party. Mm.
So a lot of Democrats, as you can imagine, went for Hawley afterwards, as I said, to try and prevent that sort of stuff from happening.
Yeah.
And a lot of that sort of whack-a-mole stuff's been happening since the 6th. Taylor Greene, I think, is another... I think she's a congresswoman who's also had a lot of criticism and efforts to... She got stripped from a lot of her positions because she spread a lot of conspiracy theories.
Yes, I do remember seeing that, yeah.
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 Anyway, back to Ed.
Be clear on this. There are two tracks that are coming together, two train tracks that are coming together. One is, and we'll talk later to John Schlafly about his recent column on this, Mike Pence has a role under the 12th Amendment of the Constitution. It was passed, the 12th Amendment, very early in our nation in order to clean up some of the concerns about how the Electoral College was working.
So yeah, just one observation from that for me. Because the Constitution in America is lauded as this, you know, almost godly thing that just kind of dictates all, and you can never question it because it's the Constitution. And it seems an odd concept to me. I get that, you know, the foundation of America perhaps been built up from there. But obviously, when was the Constitution? What year?
I'm going to say 1776, because that's the year of independence for America.
Yeah, so around that time, but the point is society has changed so much since then, and it's difficult to see how the Constitution, which is obviously very old, can still be applicable now. I think there obviously, you know, it is applicable in some ways, but you know, it's not it wasn't written for the 21st century, I think.
Yeah, although they're talking about the 12th Amendment, which is obviously an amendment which is the idea which recognises the fact that stuff changes, especially obviously about slavery and bits and like that. It's evolved in some ways.
There have been adaptations.
So I think even obviously there was a prohibition amendment. I don't know which number that was, which got obviously applied, which outlawed alcohol, and then that got then repealed.
And it made clear that the system had to have this check on it. And the check, in fact, Jefferson played this role early in, I think it was 1801. But the check on this is that the president of the Senate, vice president of the United States, who plays that role, has to receive the Electoral College votes and make a judgment, assess a judgment for himself. It's in a joint session, that's true, but the session of Congress is to witness the conduct of this vice president acting as the president of the Senate. So on January 6th, that's going to happen. Okay, that's one thing. And a lot of us are saying, hey, Mike Pence, you see the fraud. You got to do something about it. You got to say, hey, I can't accept Pennsylvania. It's too corrupt. I can't accept Wisconsin. Michigan is too corrupt. Wisconsin is too corrupt. We want him to do that. But the second track is that the 1887 law was passed that allows a congressman and a senator to pool together and object, at least one of each. Object in writing to the Electoral College. At that point, the two bodies go back and have a debate. And the debate takes place right then. So we meet at 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock on the 6th of January, there will be a meeting of this joint session in this big chamber. It'll be the House chamber. And at that point, the objections will be made. Now, Senator Hawley joined in. Thank you, Senator Hawley from Missouri. What a heroic thing. All of the senators are pressuring, saying, don't do it. We don't want this. We just want to move on. Mitt Romney, Ben Sasse, all these people are saying, oh, no, no, we don't want it. And Josh Hawley said, no, no, it's not good enough. This hasn't been right.
So this is all very speculative, obviously. This idea there's going to be a meeting at 1 o'clock. But I just want to play this clip especially because I think it's very important to see. I very strongly don't think Ed Martin thought there was going to be violence on the 6th. I think this is also quite pie in the sky, this idea that...
I think he's just trying to rally the troops, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's not inciting violence. Well, the impression I get.
I don't think anyone really planned for what happened to happen. Obviously, there were people who did put on social media, like Telegram and stuff, saying, they, as you said, like they're going to bring guns and they were expecting to raid the capital. But at the same time, I think even them, to some extent, weren't expecting to be able to do it because of like, security.
Yeah.
And it's more this strange idea that Pence was going to turn up. It's almost like a dream state where he turns up and goes, no, I'm going to throw out the election. And like Trump's then king for all time afterwards. And I think it's part of this refusal to accept reality.
Yeah.
But also recognise the political capital you get from staying loyal to Trump. As you say, like with Hawley and with Cruz, they're clearly playing the game. They don't really believe the election was... Some people do believe it. I don't know. I'm still trying to work out how far Ed actually believes it is fraudulent. I think he might. It's one of those issues, isn't it, when you think you can't seriously believe it.
The impression I get from Ed Martin, anyway, is that he's an intelligent guy. Hmm. And I think he's playing the game. I don't think he thinks it's fraudulent. I think he's seeing it as a way to further his career.
Ed Martin's career has gone bananas since this. Like really good. Like he's on RT.
Well, since the 6th.
Since the 6th. His career's really picked off. He's been covering other people's radio shows. He's been standing in. He's been talking to some very interesting characters.
The Pope?
Not the Pope, sadly. you won't know
not
him.
This time.
But he's also... Very interestingly, he's been on RT, as in Russia Today, which is the Russian state propaganda arm, and has become a very common contributor on that, which I think is very interesting and revealing about...
So bizarre.
I guess weirder, but I'm going to save that, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah.
Something really weird about that.
Save it.
But I think it's interesting to think, keep in mind that... Obviously, I thought this guy was some weird, obscure bloke who happened to know... to have been in charge of Felicia Lafferty's organisation. Yeah. And since then, he's got involved with Alexander, and now he's talking to all sorts of interesting people.
I've called it, Will. He will be the Republican candidate for president 2024.
No, I don't.
And you're going to follow him for 4 years, and you'll be the guy who's the expert on him. No.
His career is really skyrocketing. Mm. I am concerned about where is he going? Because I think he's going to be, as you say, more significant nationally and internationally as time goes on.
It'll be interesting, though, you know, if like 4 years down the line, he actually is like a fairly big player and you've kind of followed him throughout his career.
And it worries me.
No, I think that's really cool.
It's interesting, you could say
in 4 years' time, oh yeah, this guy... I was doing a podcast on him 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's really cool.
That's why I think... Because, you know, I was planning on this to be like the end of my little Ed Martin's... And I was going to go back to Conservapedia. But now it's like, no, actually, he's still becoming even more... He's becoming more relevant to this weird community.
Ed Martin is just the gift that keeps on giving.
And so he's challenging it. Huge deal. Congratulations to him. Thank you, Senator Hawley. Huge, huge kudos to him. But here's what happens next. They have that debate and they take a vote on it. And remember, on January 6th, if the problems of the election are so clear that the objections and or the concerns that Mike Pence has make it so that you don't have a majority of the Electoral College, then there's a vote in the U.S. House, one vote per state delegation, to pick the president. It's happened before. If you don't like it, then you don't like the Constitution.
As you were saying earlier, the Constitution is this holy thing.
I love the way he flips it in terms of like anyone that would be against it. He's like, well, you can't be against this. Because if you're against this, you're against the Constitution, and therefore you're against America.
Exactly, because his main argument is you can't shut us up for questioning the election result because it's our constitutional right to be able to question it. And to make sure it is fair, was fair, and all the rest of it.
If you don't like it, you don't like the Constitution. So watch what's going to happen. that we're building towards January 6th. By the way, January 6th is going to be a huge event, 10 a.m. on the Capitol towards the Supreme Court. I, along with all the Stop the Steal folks, are hosting one of these massive rallies. There'll be other rallies around the city January 6th. We need our voices heard. We, the people, will not be denied. We will not have our election stolen by the Chinese, stolen by Zuckerberg. We're sick of this. There's nobody that can convince us that this was a legitimate election. It's not. And if we're told to just, you know, quiet down and take it, that's not the American tradition. So January 6th, building, building, building.
In retrospect, this obviously seems massive. This seems very damning of Martin, the fact
yes,
he's
absolutely.
Saying, go to the Capitol. We're going to have a big rally. You can't stop stopping.
We must have our voices heard.
So it's important, I think, to mention. So I did an episode of talking about the rallies which were happening in December and November, which Ed Hope helped to organise. And for each of those, he did a little thing saying, oh, we're going to have this rally on this day and we're going to protest the election. Like, we want our voices heard. So this is an ongoing thing. Like, this didn't strike me as abnormal. I just thought, oh, this is another one of these again, sort of thing. They kept going forward and forward in terms of when the election was going to, like, the steal was going to be stopped. Because the Electoral College had their vote, sort of, I think that was December the 12th or something. And then that didn't go through. And then it was a sick. I thought, oh, this is another. He's continually just playing along. I thought, oh, we'll get to the inauguration. He'll still be saying, oh, we can still stop it. But obviously now it was quite a big thing.
Yeah,
obviously the sick.
It's blown up. I quite enjoyed the little spiel where he just went on about China and Zuckerberg seeing the election. It's just like, I think the way it comes across is a tack to try and catch more people into the movement of like, oh, well, you know, if you're against China, if you're against Zuckerberg, which, you know, a lot are, yeah, you know, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, I agree with that. I agree with this guy. I should go join Stop the Steal.
But it's all about concern. It's all about fear. It's all playing on people's fears at the end of the day. So tomorrow I've got a treat for you. You might have heard that John Schlafly was on this episode.
Yes, I that popped up clip.
We're going to hear from John Schlafly.
And he's the guy involved in Ed Martin's Schlafly Eagles, not the other one that Anne Schlafly has.
Yeah, so this is...
just to clarify,
so
I couldn't figure out which.
Yeah, so John Schlafly is the oldest child of Phyllis Schlafly. He is the treasurer for Phyllis Schlafly's Eagles, which is the organisation that John and Ed set up as a rival to Eagle Forum, which was Phyllis Schlafly's old organisation, who Ed and John were kicked out of by Anne Schlafly, Corey. And then Andy Schlafly is the son who runs Conservapedia.
Welcome back. Ed Martin here in the Pro America Report. We're talking to John Schlafly today. John Schlafly, one half of the Schlafly Report, the weekly column that posts over at townhall.com. John Schlafly authors it with his brother, Andy Schlafly, and they are two of the children of the late Phyllis Schlafly, who did a column weekly for many decades. Again, townhall.com, you can read it there. And also, we archive them over at phyllisschlafly.com. John Schlafly, the column is about Mike Pence at doing his job under the Constitution. He is on January 6th to receive the Electoral College votes in the Senate as the president of the Senate, and your plea is that he do what?
Well, first of all, Ed, I'm sure that some of your faithful readers carry around a pocket constitution with them, and I would just say
right.
The 12th Amendment, because that lays out what is to be done, what the vice president does, and the vice president shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. So it's all up to Mike Pence. It's up to him. And what Mike Pence should do, in our opinion, is to say, well, we have conflicting ballots from the states of Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Nevada. And so, therefore, we simply cannot determine here who gets those votes. So therefore, we're not counting them.
Like you said, it just comes across as this fairy tale, idealistic thing, almost out of a Hollywood film. You know that it's all going horribly wrong, it's crashing and burning, and then this hero saves the day with this, you know, loophole in the Constitution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you got the scary side of it, which as you mentioned, the people who broke into the Capitol, some of them were calling for Mike Pence and to call him grievous harm, if not kill him, because he didn't do this.
Well, they were. Did you see the videos where like it mapped how close the protesters were to him? It was terrifying.
Yeah, and it's you've got this double-edged sword where you've got, yes, you've got this sort of fanciful idea that he's going to come in and save the day, but at the same time, it's like, well, if you don't do that, Mike, we will come for you. So there's this horrible thing where, yes, Mike, you will do this, because
if not, your head's on the line.
We'll be coming after you, which obviously is what happened.
He must be terrified. Has there been much from him since the 6th? Did he condemn it?
I don't know what he said. I don't know if he ever had anything to say on it. He turned up to the inauguration.
Yeah,
Trump did
I
it.
Knew that.
It was that was an odd thing where after the 6th, obviously there were calls for Pence to... There's some amendment which has you remove
like
the president.
The president wasn't like eligible or wasn't fit for office.
Yeah, not fit for office. It's a health concern, i.e. mentally.
Yeah.
That the cabinet under the VP removes the president, and he obviously didn't do that. But there was a lot of obviously concern. So he played both sides, Pence, in a way. He was unwilling to fully come out and deal with Trump, despite Trump supporters obviously trying to kill him, which is quite the thing.
Yeah, he was stuck between a rock and a hard place, I think it'd be fair to say.
Mm.
And so therefore, no candidate won a majority of the electoral votes on the day appointed, which was November 3rd of 2020. Now, the Constitution then says exactly what happens next. What happens next is that the House of Representatives goes over to its chamber, and it proceeds immediately to take a vote for President of the United States on the basis of one state, one vote. And that's what should happen on January 6th.
It's just not very democratic, is that? One state, one vote.
Interesting you say democratic, Torrin, because what I was going to come to... So, in this episode, they're talking about this article which the Shafley brothers have written on townhall.com. The one they posted on the 6th, because that was a Wednesday, which is...
Was this before or after?
In the hours before it all kicked off. And I'm going to quote from... This is what the Shafley brothers said. Quote, "We are not a democracy. And never have been. We are a constitutional republic, and the founders were strongly opposed to democracy and the many severe problems it can create." End quote. So there's your answer to John's position on whether on this being undemocratic.
That's just, for me, that just highlights how extreme that, you know, this they are.
Yes,
you know,
in terms
of
their view.
Because I knew they were extreme, but like, to say that America is a constitutional republic and not a democracy is just such a sweeping statement. Mm. You know, we could spend hours dissecting that.
Because when it was all kicking off at the Capitol, I went on Twitter, obviously, and of course I went to Ed Martin to see his coverage, and the last tweet he'd done was a retweet of that article.
So I think that's... playing devil's advocate here a bit, I think that's the danger of social media. Because the implementation is that by retweeting that article, Ed Martin is supporting whatever's in that article.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's very loose. He could have just... Mm. been sharing it. It's difficult
and also,
to disentangle.
Yeah, and also they didn't know what's going to happen. They weren't.
No.
They didn't. As I said, I don't think they knew. It looks really bad, the fact they're saying all this.
Yeah.
But again, it's, as you're saying, it's this idea that they're a constitutional republic and the people who matter are the elected officials, who are obviously the people in Congress, and it's then up to them, if it's unclear who won the election, to decide who did win the election, who to stay on.
But theoretically, in that
spirit,
whoever's in power could just indefinitely stay in power. They can go, you know, what they're asking Mike Pence to do, Joe Biden could have done when Obama was president and gone, well, you know, Bass have been like, it's been stolen, all this kind of stuff. Like with Hillary Clinton.
I agree. But the problem, in theory. The thing I would say, though, is the Republicans and the Schlafly's and Martin in this case are banking on the fact that the Republicans had a majority in the Senate and in Congress. And that they were likely then to carry that, because the issue was they were also in charge under Obama. So even if Obama did say, "Oh, it's stolen," the Republicans in the Capitol would overrule it. And that was the dodgy position with Trump, is that he had the presidency, obviously he was due to vacate it, but he also had these stooges who didn't obviously impeached him, but didn't charge him and remove him from office. So that weird interplay between these sycophants.
Well, it was the two of the counties had to be rerun, didn't they, in Georgia.
Yeah, which happened.
And I remember watching it just thinking, please swing like the Democrat way. You know, and even then it's 50-50, isn't it? So Kamala Harris has the deciding tie vote.
Which is what Pence had at the time as well. He had the deciding
vote. Was it 50-50 at the time?
Yes, I think shortly before. At least when Trump first became, I'm not too sure what happened in the midterms. I can't remember when it was. There was a period where Pence, again, was the deciding vote, which just shows you how fractured American politics was, that for several years now they've had a Congress which has been split down the middle in terms of Republicans and Democrats.
I think it was very telling the fact that, you know, Biden got elected with a record number of votes, but Trump also received a record number of votes. And it just shows you how divided but also how the rhetoric, how energized the Americans were going into this election. But, you know, it was so Marmite, wasn't it? You're either so clearly for or against Donald Trump that you're either going to really be advocating getting out there to vote. You know, you can't really sit on the fence on this one, can you?
No.
John, I was just laying out for the listeners, on January 6th, when does, in your description of what Mike Pence does, it's, as you say, the Senate and House are observing, they're not doing anything. When does the objection of now Senator Hawley and Mo Brooks and Congressman Mo Brooks and others, when does that fit into the timeline of what you're describing?
Well, it doesn't. There's nothing in the Constitution about that. That business about one senator and one House member objecting, that comes from a law passed by Congress in 1887 after the last time that there was disputed electors. And that law has never been tested. I think that President Trump would get 27 out of the 50 state votes in that election, called a contingent election.
So I think that's interesting because it again shows how hollow Cruz and Hawley and the rest of them are, that it doesn't really fit into this whole amendment thing. This is, again, grandstanding and declaring their support, to me, their support for Trump. And if we need to use this law, so if the whole Pence thing falls apart, at least we can then go use this law and try and argue it again this other way.
Yeah.
As such.
Yeah.
So we're now going to talk about the 6th, where Ed was, and also the pro-America report from the 6th. So I'm going to start off with the opening of the episode on the 6th, which is Ed in his office, or I'd rather say his bunker.
And is this before or after things have kicked
off?
This
is after things have kicked off.
On the 6th?
On the 6th.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is the Pro-America Report on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Ed Martin here on the Pro-America Report. Hey, I got a special program today. I'm going to give you an update, what you need to know, but then I got to run because I'm actually in Washington, D.C., and all the stuff that's going on around here today has been extraordinary. So I want to tell you about that. Then we'll play a couple of segments that are what we call evergreen segments that you can just listen to some of the great interviews we've had recently.
So this is the first time Ed uses old clips, so his evergreen segments. Before that, all the episodes I've listened to have all been fresh clips, pretty much. Since the 6th, interestingly, he's used a lot more, he's done reruns of interviews, which is really odd. I'm guessing that's because maybe he's busy with other stuff. So as you can hear, obviously, the quality isn't there, really.
He sounds a bit rushed.
And he's a bit croaky.
And a bit hectic and just off his feet.
Which I quite like about this episode, because it reflects what's going on. It's sort of looking over his shoulder a bit.
Yeah.
But first, let me tell you exactly what went on today. Extraordinary day. First of all, I started out to crack a dawn today, came into Washington, D.C. to get ready for today, the great January 6th, constitutionally, legally required day that we go ahead and have the Electoral College votes presented to the Congress. And before, early in the day, I actually did a bunch of radio programming, all different kinds of things. And then I headed over to the White House, to the Ellipse. And I was very blessed and privileged. I was in the second row in front of the president as he spoke for about an hour and 15 minutes. And he spoke about how corrupt the process of the election was. And he went into specifics. He went into specifics on the challenges in each of the states, what he saw, what they were pushing. And it was very compelling.
So the speech at the Ellipse is obviously the big Trump rally, which Trump did outside the White House. And as you said, he then told the crowd to go on to the Capitol to have their voices heard.
I will be with you.
And I will be with you.
Yes.
As Ed said, he was. He says he's in the second row. We'll dispute that. We'll look into that in a second. So that speech was obviously the basis for the whole impeachment thing, the idea that he'd whipped up the crowd.
Yeah. And incited violence.
Incited violence and what have you.
You mean the impeachment that is a politically motivated witch hunt?
Yes. The second one. Not the one about the whole Biden Ukraine stuff.
The second one. It's hard to keep track when there's all these impeachments lying about.
Anyway, so this is an article I found from the Wall Street Journal commenting on this rally at the Ellipse. Quote, "The rally in Washington's Ellipse that preceded the 6th January riot at the US Capitol was arranged and funded by a small group, including a top Trump campaign fundraiser, facilitated by far-right show host Alex Jones.
Dun, dun, dun.
Who I've said already is a close associate of Ali Alexander, who is the head of StopTheSteal.us,
yes.
Who Ed works for or worked as part of. So there's a Jericho March, is one of the rallies which Ed turned up at, on stage with Ali Alexander, which is like a big Christian rally. Alex Jones was one of the people who turned up later on in the day, had a really funny set. So I've listened to the Knowledge Fight episodes covering, because Alex Jones was there. He wasn't anywhere near the Capitol itself.
Yeah.
Just worth mentioning that. So back to the Wall Street Journal article. Quote, "Mr. Jones personally pledged more than $50,000 in seed money for a planned January 6th event in exchange for a guaranteed, quote, top speaking slot of his choice, end quote, according to a funding document outlining a deal between his company and an early organiser for the event. Mr. Jones also helped arrange for Julie Jenkins Fancelli, a prominent donor to the Trump campaign, and pay for the lion's share of the roughly $500,000 rally at the Ellipse where Mr. Trump spoke." So there's a lot of money going into this.
Yeah.
This
wow.
speech.
I didn't
happened.
Know that.
Mm.
It's interesting.
Back to the article. "Another far-right activist and leader of the Stop the Steal movement, Ali Alexander, helped coordinate planning with Caroline Wren, a fundraising official who was paid by the Trump campaign for much of 2020 and who was tapped by Mrs. Fancelli to organise and fund an event on her behalf," organisers said. So that whole rally, which was like the centrepiece of the impeachment thing, organised by Ali Alexander, he's obviously a close friend of Ed Martin.
You're seeing all the tires now.
I've got some photos to show you.
Lovely.
I'm going to put these on the Instagram, which is @Schlafliverse. So please check out the Instagram.
And how do you spell that? I can never remember how Schlafliverse is spelled.
S-C-H-L-A-F-L-Y-D-E-R-S-E. And if you listen to this podcast, just pause it and look at it there.
It's a great name. Schlafly is just so confusing, though.
So,
let's see.
This is from Ed's account. And the guy on the left is Ali Alexander. And the woman on the right is Jenny Beth Martin, who is the co-founder of the Tea Party Patriots and a columnist for the Washington Times. And as you can see, they're in the front row. And you might be surprised to find that Ali Alexander is black, potentially.
Yes. Yeah, I was very surprised by that.
Which is an interest. I always find it was.
Well, it's.
And also, there's a. And this is also interesting.
I'm always surprised when a black American supports Trump.
And it's such a massive figure in it as well.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, so this is a picture at the Ellipse rally, and you see Ali's right in the front row, unsurprising being one of the organisers. There's also another black man next to Jenny Beth, who is sitting next to Alexander. I'm going to do another shot in a second, which is, again, more black Americans, which I think is really interesting. I think again, I think the whole Trump campaign is very much seen in this white supremacist, racist yes. undertones.
Oh, definitely. But there's you wouldn't think the head of the Stop the Steal movement would be black.
No, it's quite a surprise.
Absolutely not.
Mm. So that's the picture off Ed Switzer I managed to find. And then here is a picture from Jenny, I said, who's the woman sitting next to Ali in the photograph. And you can just about make out Ed here.
Yes.
Which...
Third row.
Exactly.
Third row, he's lied. Maybe he moved to have a conversation with someone.
That's what I'm wondering. So there's... driven me mad, this photo.
This is something only you would get caught up in.
Yeah.
Which row he was sat in. Yeah. Like, such an intricate detail.
Because it's like, did he lie? As you say, is he lying? Because he's clearly in the third row.
Maybe?
He misspoke. Because he sits next to a man called Ryan, who mentions later in this episode, I think, or maybe another one, he sat next to a guy called Ryan Gudersky, who is another right-wing commentator. I can't see him here, although I can't see who Ed's potentially talking to because Jenny's in the way.
Jenny.
Damn it, Jenny. But it's interesting, I think, that the only evidence I've got of Ed at this rally, at the Ellipse, he's in the third row, despite him saying he's in the second, which I don't know if it's a misspoke or it's him claiming he's...
Trying to claim more importance.
Exactly. I'm not too sure what it is. But, again, about Ed being important, he's at this rally. He's in the special section of all these... A lot of these people are very important people yes. who are still remaining loyal to Trump. And he's there, third row, second row. And he's in the middle as well. I think it's important to point out. Like the aisle is just there. And he's slap bang there in front of the president. As you probably know, a lot of people since the rally got in trouble and were removed from Twitter and what have you. So on the 8th of January...
Was Michael Flynn removed? He was, wasn't
yes.
he?
Yes. So on the 8th, Michael Flynn's account got taken down, amongst others, for promoting QAnon stuff. So I've mentioned before, Michael Flynn is a good friend of Ed, and... Ed said that he's appearing on the Pro America Report at some point this week, which is the first time Flynn's actually potentially appeared on the show.
And I suppose it shows you that Ed Martin is perhaps becoming a more important
figure. Yeah, the fact that Flynn actually has decided to come on now. His lawyer's been on, his sister's been on, his brother's been on, but he himself has not been on. So it's interesting that, only now has he
decided.
The man himself has turned up, potentially. And then on the 10th, so that was on the 8th. On the 10th, the Twitter then took down Ali Alexander's account, and also Ali took down Stop the Steal website, which is annoying. And since then, he's gone into hiding. So, I said earlier.
As in, like, no one knows where he is. No, he's just like staying quiet.
He just ran off because he looked guilty as hell. But he recently, so thankfully, obviously, we're recording this in late February. I've now heard whispers that he's going to come out back out into the world and will be holding rallies supposedly in March. So it'll be interesting to see if Ed bothers to associate himself again with Ali Alexander.
Yeah.
So the main reason why Ali Alexander got in quite a lot of hot water is, this is, I'm going to quote now from an article by Right Wing Watch, quote, ahead of the Capitol insurrection, Alexander embraced increasingly violent rhetoric, calling for revolution and rebellion. A short distance away from the White House, the day before the insurrection, Alexander stated a, quote, victory or death, end quote, chant at a Stop the Steal rally, quote, our government is only our government if it is legitimate, end quote, he declared at the rally, quote, 1776 is always an option, end quote. As I mentioned before, 1776 is the year of American independence and the American Revolution, and a lot of these people, especially the militia lot, wanted a revolution and kept quoting 1776, this is at the rally and as they stormed the Capitol.
We did kind of, in the weeks building up to the election and after the election, kind of scarily joke about the implications of a possible American Civil War.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my word.
So so Ali has a lot of heat on him because he was more prominent, as he thinks, to Alex Jones, and literally was saying, victory or death.
Victory or death, which ended up actually being the case.
The death being sadly the option. Yeah, yes. Sadly what came out of that. So we go back to...
Well, I'm glad victory didn't come out.
Oh, thank God, yeah. Well, been a long, long damn fight. So we go back to Ed now on the 6th and his show discussing what had happened.
massive crowd, 250,000 people, something like that, gathered in front of the White House. His president speaks for an hour and a half. He says, we're going to march down to the Capitol, get down to the Capitol, and a huge crowd around both sides of the Capitol. Now, the media started reporting that the Capitol was rushed. The Capitol was rushed as if people rushed in. I didn't see that. I was around the Capitol. It looked, again, it looked a lot more like Mardi Gras than it looked like a riot to me, but I've never been in a riot.
So throughout the other rallies,
The audacity to compare, you know, I guess, you know, we've got the benefit of hindsight, but to compare what happened to Mardi Gras is just...
From what I can tell, he wasn't near the Capitol when that happened.
Yeah.
I think he was very much saying that people who wanted a fight went to the Capitol.
Yeah.
And other people were just sort of hanging around. So I think that's fair for what he said. At the same time, Mardi Gras is what he always uses as his reference point. Throughout the other rallies he did, he always says, oh, it's like Mardi Gras. Like, it's his catchphrase for saying something was good. That's his go-to little thing, which I appreciate.
Is that the name of the episode? It's like Mardi Gras or something like that.
Jeremy Lissip, Mardi Gras.
Something like that. That'd be good. That'd be a good title.
Anyway, so there we are, and we go through this, and then I guess on one side of the Capitol, some people pushed their way into the building, and they got onto the floor of the House and even into Nancy Pelosi's office. And here's the thing. I'm not a fan of any violence, right? I mean, we all said we've been doing all these peaceful protests. I know people are frustrated, but pushing indoors, breaking windows, scaring people, not good, right? So most of us, including the president, said, hey, everybody stay peaceful. You can be rowdy and loud, but you can't be violent. And
this is Trump's speech. And I took this clip out because I think it's really interesting.
What the hell is going on? There's never been anything like this. We will not let them silence your voices. We're not going to let it happen. Not going to let it happen. Thank you.
So what's the chanting?
Fight for Trump.
Fight for, okay.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Exactly. And this is about 10 minutes into his hour 15 speech.
Fight for Trump.
And this is my biggest concern, is that this is the whirlwind they've reaped. I don't think they were expecting what happened on the 6th to happen, but they have fed these people lies and fear-mongering and have just whipped them up into an absolute fury. And they have agency. These crowds have agency. I don't care what amount of blame put on the individuals for lead. There's no such. You can't control this movement. It is, as I said, it was organic, that chant, fight for Trump. And no matter what you say about Trump saying, oh, no violence, all the rest of it, they were there for a fight. And even these people who are at, these say, that's happening around Ed. Ed is sitting there in front of Trump as he is saying this, as these people are chanting this. Obviously, I have no evidence if he was joining in or not. I can't speculate on that. But he's there. He heard that going down.
He's not condemning that.
And they say, this is at the rally. This is not at the Capitol. This is at the rally. Ed is here. He is hearing this. Yes. And he goes on later to say, oh, we're racist, we're non-violent, and all the rest of it. That's so fascist. I'm sorry. It's so authoritarian, scary stuff. In fact, you've got a crowd. I will lay down my life for you, Mr. Trump.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrible.
And you can see why, and this is what makes me angry about the people like Ed, is, say, he's there. There's no way. He was bloody there. Listen to that. And he still goes on now saying, oh, most people were nice and good.
It's portraying a picture, isn't it, to the people who haven't done
weren't there. It's all about...
Who are just like, oh, I'll just listen to this podcast to find out what happened. You know, what
his
was
radio
the
show.
And he says, and then they go to their friends, no, you know, it was actually peaceful. You know, here's Ed Martin, this guy who's important, who was there, who was sat in the second row, you know, saying that it was all peaceful.
Now, I have heard, I haven't really gotten it confirmed, that some of the folks that were inside the Capitol that were causing trouble were not sort of on our side. They were troublemakers. That's possible. That's possible. You do get troublemakers drawn to things like this. Even get troublemakers who are for Trump.
So it's interesting there that he makes a distinction between troublemakers and troublemakers for Trump. Because as we'll lead into the next episode of his podcast, he very much quickly blames Antifa and left-wing people for enabling the storming of the Capitol. he's better than other people, and he says they are dumb Trump supporters who were involved and did it. I mean, at least he's willing to accept that. Other people, such as Alex Jones, are very much, no, they were all Antifa, they were all left wing. This isn't true.
They want to be a part of trouble. So I'm not discounting that. All I'm saying is that the concerns expressed are real, the worries are real, the feeling about the election is real and serious. Any of the violence is bad.
But at least Ed said, like, this is not what we're for. We're not for violence. So I have to give him the fact he is.
Yeah, it's difficult to disentangle. Is that his genuine belief? I think so.
Or is it just
covering his back? I think it is.
I think it's genuine. I get from the tone, because he takes quite an interesting, he takes quite a hard tone there. It's quite a formal tone, which is interesting and rare.
Which isn't one he normally takes.
Not necessarily one he normally takes, no.
And more importantly than anything shown from tonight, as I'm watching the details come out about the Capitol issue, is it doesn't work to be lawless. It doesn't work to be violent. 99.99% of the people who were involved in everything, Stop the Steal and otherwise, were not.
So as much as I like Ed's point there that most people aren't violent, we don't go violent. Ali goddamn Alexander, who is the head of the booth, he decided to go into hiding because of the nonsense he was saying. As I said before, about victory or death.
Victory for death, fight for Trump, fight for, you know, it doesn't come across as peaceful.
Didn't, you know, we're clearly steered way clear of that. And some people did some things that were dumb, made mistakes. And again, I hope and pray, especially for law enforcement, that they be safe and that everything be turned out fine. But let me just tell you, heard from a lot of people. They're so frustrated with the direction of the country. They're so frustrated with the lack of leadership in the House and Senate, the U.S. House and Senate, that their frustration is real. It shouldn't be ever be portrayed or ever be acted out with any kind of violence or whatever, but it's real. And we need to be aware of that and the impact of that as we go forward.
So, of course, he's right. You know, as a country, they need to be aware of that. But, you know, there's also people who are very frustrated, very upset with the direction of the country of Trump. And, you know, again with Ed, I feel like he fails to recognise that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there is another side to
it. He's in his own bubble, and the left exactly. Of the bad people and the globalists and the what have you, yeah. But I like that. I think there's lots of Ed can. Oh, what I like about Ed is, yes, he can do the mad stuff sometimes, but he can be quite profound, and that was quite profound saying that. And I think it's important, he said, like, it's important to recognise there is real anger and problems in America and anger with leadership and politicians, and that needs to be recognised.
He seems to be this very well-spoken, you know, can be serious and whatever, but does, like, the wacko stuff, but make sure, like, he's not too associated with it, that he's going to get in trouble kind of thing.
Yeah, I think I think this episode especially is good at, I mean, what we're trying to do is show the darker side to Ed, because there is certainly a much darker. I'm not touched at all on his commentary on abortion or women's rights or other. There's other and a lot of social issues. The social issue stuff, which is about half the Pro-America Report is social issues. Other stuff is politics, and we very much in this podcast disservice to the social issue stuff he does, because the politics is obviously ever changing and more accessible in this situation. I think this episode hopefully has done well to demonstrate that he is involved in some dark and disturbing stuff.
Well, as much as you dress it up, I know you know we've said that we don't think his intention was to incite violence. But, you know, he has contributed clearly from that episode on the 31st of December. You know, he's clearly contributing to kind of stirring up the crowd and whipping them up and kind of this their fury and their. You know, so although perhaps that wasn't his intention, he is guilty of that without a doubt.
I mean, in organising the rallies in November and December, he enabled this. He enabled it to have momentum. I don't think this what happened on the 6th would have happened had those rallies not happened, which stirred. There's a big effort after the election to mobilise people and to enable them to get there on the 6th and to not so much brainwashing, but to promote them.
Coerce.
So the election was stolen. Trump is this is the end of America. If you think about it, we are being overtaken by our Chinese agents and what have you.
It's obviously bringing it back to climate change like I always do, but it's that classic rhetoric which it has with tobacco companies in the 60s, 80s, you know, climate change and big oil now. It's, okay, we're not getting it right, we're going to incite doubt we're going to spread doubt so that we can try and, you know, cling on for as long as we can. And I think that's what it was essentially for me. Like, we haven't got our way. We're going to just make this really doubtful. And it, I think it made people unsure who are, you know, more logical people. It made them doubt and be like, oh, well, maybe we do need to look at this. I don't know.
I think if you spread distrust and you create instability, people then rush to people who offer either guidance or comfort.
Yes.
And is one of those people who strives to offer guidance and comfort through his radio show and through his actions, which again is why it's interesting his career's picked up, seeing where that goes. So that's the end of this episode on what happened before and on the 6th of January regarding Ed Martin. I hope it's been interesting. Obviously,
it's been fascinating. Obviously, it's been nice to talk about it.
Yeah, and the 6th of January has been really. I've absolutely loved the stuff about the 6th of January.
Be careful when you say you loved the 6th of January.
But it's the more. It's the mobilisation of, and it's the disinformation, and it's this stuff which is existing on the internet becoming.
Well,
real
it highlights
and
the danger,
threat.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Of all this just uncertainty and fake news and. It highlights, you know, what can happen with all this stuff. You know, it needs to be better regulated.
Mm, exactly. And the threat to democracy itself. Or, as John would say.
There's no threat, you know. America's not even a democracy.
Exactly.
So, you know. What democracy is there?
What democracy? Constitutional republic. unless Trump is the dictator, in which case not so much the republic.
Terrifying. Anyway, thank you very much for having me.
That's all right. This podcast was researched and presented by me, William Lear.
And me, Torren Whitehead.
Music was done by Ted Wallaker.
And the graphic was designed by Alice Eves.